Hello, faithful followers, and thank you for tuning in to Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts. Tonight, we're going to look at Holzer Files Season 1, Episode 3, A Grave Revenge. And this is an interesting episode because, you know, this was actually the very first episode that we shot together as a team. As a matter of fact, I've got that is the very first ever selfie of the team on site getting ready to head over to the Whaley House. We were all, again, familiar with one another, had talked to one another leading up to this, but had never had a chance to work together. So this was pretty exciting and intimidating all at the same time. This was in the hotel lobby there as we were setting off to begin, I think, on our baseline investigation night. So it was a fun experience. It was exciting. Many of you, since we started doing this, have asked when we were going to get to this episode, because obviously this is one of the more dramatic episodes where Dave gets knocked to his ass. And I know everybody's been waiting to watch me get knocked to my ass. As a matter of fact, my guest has been waiting for 15 years to watch me get knocked on my ass. And thankfully, she was witness to it. And because of her, she got to share it with me. Ladies and gentlemen, paranormal investigator and author, researcher, Alexandra Holzer. Hello, Alexandra.
Hello, Mr. Dave.
So this was an amazing place. I got to tell you, when we first heard, especially me, we're coming out of the gate. Your dad's got thousands of files on haunts all over. And the first place they tell me is we're heading to the Whaley House. And, you know, we'd been talking about how this was going to be a different type of show. We were going to do different things. And the first place is the Whaley. I'm like, the Whaley House? Everybody's done the Whaley House. They have milked this cow dry. What more is there to learn? And they're like, man, we got to hit the Whaley House. You got to understand, this is one of Hans Holzer's big cases. It is so influential to him. He called this the most haunted house in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty big step. Why do you feel that of all the locations he went to, that one stood out so much to him?
That's a great question, Dave. You know, the Whaley House was one of those moments where he felt that he could potentially put that place on the map as well. And why that was so important was, you know, during a time where you were coming out of, you know, spiritism in the 60s and spiritualism and the movement and so forth, that he wanted to bring that back and he wanted to educate the public. And how do you do that? And he really felt that when he went there on his first visit, after hearing the stories of the property and what was going on, and Mr. Whaley himself and how that was purchased on the land and what went on there before the land, kind of like in Amityville, if you will, he knew that the history would unfold and a great story would come of it, of truth and fact and questions, more questions. And so it just was that moment for him where he said, this will reach the public. This place will help bring about the conversation to be had.
So for people that might not remember or didn't get a chance to rewatch the episode, the Whaley House was built in 1857 by Mr. Whaley. And he had purchased this plot of land at a very cheap rate. If I remember correctly, it was something like $3. He bought this plot of land. And why would it be so inexpensive? Well, because it had been the site of three hangings. This was the gallows area. This is the place where they would hang criminals. And Mr. Whaley was a witness for each one of these hangings. Yankee Jim Robinson being probably the most prominent and famous, and the one that your father believed he came into contact with when he was there. But this story with the paranormal, as far as we knew, started well after the Whaley family had died, well, you know, into its history of being a museum and this kind of shell that had been sitting there untouched for years. And it had been kind of turned back around into something, and people started to recognize strange paranormal activity. But your father specifically was drawn to this location because of his friend Regis Philbin, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So Regis, this was before he had his daytime talk show. He was doing radio at the time. And in fact, connected with my father, they did a program separately, and he was on his show on WOR Radio in New York, which is still on air, by the way, the station. And so that kind of off spun another idea of, hey, you know, and the way Regis was is like, hey, aunts, you know, what about these ghosts? Let's you and me check out the Whaley House. And that's how that conversation really began. And so, of course, my father, not wasting an opportunity, understanding what this could mean, you know, the value of it, said, okay, we're going to make a date. We're going to go and do this.
Now, what's cool about this is I tooling around online, I actually found a video of Regis Philbin discussing the story before he connected with your dad, having gone in there with a friend. So we're going to take a second, do something a little different tonight, kids. We're going to be multi-active. So I apologize if I'm looking away and a lot of clicking's going on, but I just want to make sure we get this right. But we're going to hear Regis Philbin's story, his paranormal encounter at the Whaley House.
I proceeded to walk around the floors and go upstairs and just peek around, make sure everything was in order. I remember going down that staircase. I did smell a little bit of a cigar smoke, and I know that Anna Whaley's husband was a big cigar smoker, but I didn't want to tell him because he didn't believe in this at all. This is all ridiculous. This is kid stuff. So it ran into midnight. I said to him, let's turn out the lights and just keep this place in darkness. We went around, we turned off the lights everywhere in the place. Came back to the living room, which had an archway of a doorway facing us where you could look into the next room. And I had the flashlight. And there we sat in darkness. So the hours went by, and it must have been 2 o'clock in the morning. And by this time, we're plunged in darkness. And of course, my friend, the tough Marine, was heckling me about how silly this is, what a waste of time it is. And then suddenly he stopped talking. He says, don't turn on the light. I looked up and looked through the archway. And there was this image illuminated in white. It was almost like a transparent shape of a woman, really. Not going down all the way to the floor, just standing there. And it was kind of like staring back at us. The kind of stuff you see in the movies. I knew this tough old Marine had seen it too. Now, he got on his hands and knees, and he began crawling like he was approaching the enemy. And he quietly pulled his way over the floor to the end of the room. And I got very, very, very excited because honestly, I thought somebody or something was there. And I knew what he was going to do. He's a Marine. He's going to go and tackle it, bring it down. I was just beside myself. So he got as close as he could. I couldn't stand it anymore. I held the light out there and flipped on the flashlight. And there was nothing there. The colonel was very upset. I didn't follow his orders, not turning on the light. I went through all of that, took a good look against the wall, and there was a picture of a woman. The image was right smack up against the picture on that wall. And it was Anna Whaley.
We want to thank Celebrity Ghost Stories for that clip. Really cool piece to hear Regis actually tell this story. Uh-huh. And, you know, he informs your dad. Your dad comes there to do this seance. And, gosh, I'm trying to remember. Did he go in with Sybil or Ethel on this one?
He went with Sybil.
Sybil. And goes in, and there's this footage of, and you see it in the episode. You see the little microphone sticking in with like a radio station logo on it. And that's Regis Philbin holding in the microphone as Sybil's going into trance and starts talking about her experiences. you know, that's enough. You get Regis Philbin seeing something, this hardcore Marine that's seeing something who's not a believer. Your dad goes there. Sybil starts to connect. And your dad visited, what'd you say, around three times?
Yeah, at least.
And it still, every time, stood the test of time for him. He believed this was one of the most haunted houses in America, period. Suddenly, I feel like I'm channeling Regis.
I can't help myself. But, you know, it's, you know, and plus, you know, my father, even though he was Austrian, became a New Yorker. And so there was this New York thing going on. And it was like a dare. I dare you to come with me. I dare us to do this. And when they were there with Sybil, the whole trance itself can be very unnerving. And, you know, he really was interested in finding out what was happening there. Could he have his own personal experience, which I think a lot of people are in search of these days? You know, I'd like to experience it. It's not that I don't believe, I just want to see for myself. And so my father was that catalyst for him, and it worked for both of them. Regis was able to be in on a real transmedium session with Sybil, who we all know in here on the Holzer Files can be quite creepy at times. And then my father, being who he is, was able to both give each other something out of that, you know, and it just blew up from there. And Regis was just fascinated and had his own experiences. And it's that sitting in the quiet. So when he talks about his other experience, you know, he did that with my father and Sybil. Everything had to be quiet. And then all of a sudden you start hearing something in the upstairs, but nobody's there because, you know, you contain the situation, no contaminants. So everything was ready, you know, so it was just.
And if I recall correctly, going through the file, there was one picture, but it was so washed out that your dad actually caught a photograph of something anomalous in the house. But it was so, through time, blanched out, we couldn't tell. But this was the one that came with the note. It was something we couldn't end up showing. And we're going to discuss things we couldn't show in the episode. You thought watching me get knocked on my ass was an amazing moment for most of you. There was one other moment in this episode, Alex, that I will talk about now. So we're there, and it's my first interview. I'm interviewing with this lovely lady, Jokey, who's one of the tour guides, and she takes us up to the theater room. Mm-hmm. We're in the theater, and she's telling us about the ghosts. And, you know, before we go in, again, this is our first time investigating, our first time doing a TV show like this. And, you know, our director and executive producer are like, If anything, you notice anything, don't be afraid to stop and point it out. Talk about what's going on. I'm like, okay. So we're standing there and we're listening, and Jokey's telling us ghost stories. And she says that there's a man spirit that's very strong, and he doesn't like other men who think they're in authority. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So I mentally start thinking, what can I do to not be a dick, but act authoritative to see if the spirit will interact with me? And literally, as I'm standing there trying to think of this, my knees buckle for a second, and I kind of shift and stand back up. And it was just like a quick second, but I'm like, what just happened? And we continue talking, and I just kind of phased out past Jokey, and the director goes, is everything okay? I don't know. I don't know that I want to say what happened. And they're like, well, tell us. That's what we're here. We're here to do a show. What did you see? What did you? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm looking at Shane and I'm looking at this group. And again, my first time meeting everybody and doing all this. And I go, she said, this spirit does not like a spirit in authority. And I tried to think, what can I do to seem authoritative? And suddenly something grabbed my underwear from inside my pants and yanked it down, like de-pantsed me, leaving my pants on. But my underwear is down. And I'm like, am I hallucinating this? And Shane's a good guy. Here's the official first poor Shane moment in Holzer Files history. I go, I'm not kidding, Shane, come here. And we walk around the corner, and I think it's just Shane and I unlash my pants and drop them so that he can see I'm not yanking my pants down. But my underwear is pulled underneath my butt cheeks. And then I turn around, I go, do you see that? And I turn around and they got the camera. they're focusing in, and I'm like, no, and pulled up my pants. But I'm like, what the hell? This thing knew what I was thinking. I was I was telepathically, I guess, resonating and saying, I'm going to try to find a way to challenge this spirit. Mm-hmm. But A, there was no way for us to show this to prove it. This is more anecdotal because, again, there was no camera focused on my butt to see my underwear slide down. There was nothing. Then they're like, Dave, are you sure, you know, you're a guy? Has the elastic band blown out and you just should have thrown these underwear out? I'm like, no. And then to prove it, I wore that same pair of underwear going up and down those stairs of the Whaley House. And you've been in there. They're steep stairs.
Yeah.
If they were blown underwear, they would have fallen down again. They didn't. And they came down with force. So it was one of the most surreal, holy shit minutes I ever had. As a matter of fact, I'll bank that against getting knocked down any day. That was just so, I felt very offended and I felt very violated that it could do something like that to me. And I think it didn't end up in the episode because we interrupted it and things got so weird.
Right.
And poor Jokey's like, what just happened? And we're telling and explaining what's going on. So that was one of the moments that we didn't get to see on camera tonight during that episode, A Grave Revenge. And we're discussing Hans Holzer's case, A Grave Revenge, The Haunting of the Whaley House in San Diego, California. Alexandra Holzer, my guest this evening, as we're talking about this. And we've got some more video clips that we'll show as we go along. While we were there doing this initial walkthrough, Alex, you remember I'm outside, stationed outside underneath this protective awning, and I've got my system set up and I'm watching inside. And the Cindy goes in and immediately just starts to get very tense and uncomfortable. I had been in and out of that house all day and I never felt uncomfortable except for that one moment up in the theater. But when she started to complain, I went to walk in and it really felt this kind of stifling, choking, thick feeling. And I was like, oh, that did not feel like this today. As a matter of fact, I pulled over one of the cameramen, Rob, and I said, Rob, walk in there for a minute. And he walked in. He goes, what the hell was that? And I go, right? Do you feel that? He goes, yeah, man, that's really thick. That's tension. And I said, yeah. He goes, ooh, it's going to be weird. So we're sitting there. Cindy's talking about all this stuff going on, what she's picking up on. And it's, again, we don't give her any information because that was important to your dad, right? Keep the medium a blank slate. Mm-hmm. Why? So that people can understand, why is that so important? Instead of giving them maybe a nugget of information so they have a jumping off point, why does your dad want, for the Holzer method, just a completely clean slate with this medium?
Because he believed in the work of using ESP and mental control and stability to tap into what's already there. And by that, I mean, not being gadget heavy, not having the presumption that you're going to walk in and have the answers. And so you have to clear your mind. So it's about contamination. And so when you don't have the information, you're acting as a tool, which is what mediumship is. It's another tool. The least you know, the better, because you're going in with as clean of a slate as you can, which is why before you do any investigation or you're talking to anybody or doing a psychic reading or anything like that, you're already getting messages. All of us are getting messages. It's just, are we aware or not? And how clear can we get them? And so for the medium to be completely out of tune with what's going on in that location and any information is crucial because they're a blank slate. They're not contaminated, and they can give the best results going in with that intention.
Well, that was, watching her go in blank. And I know people have a hard time understanding that. We don't want her to have any concept of what's going on. So literally, we come into California. We didn't tell her where we were going in California. We drove, I think, an hour and a half to San Diego. Had her come in and do the walkthrough that first night. Then she knew it was the Whaley House, but she had never been there. She was not familiar with the history and had no time to refresh herself. So I know the skeptics are always going to believe we feed the mediums. We don't, because we want a true moment to see. And, sometimes as I'm going through your dad's notes, some of these things are lining up perfectly. Some make absolutely no sense to me. Uh-huh. And, those I take note of to see if we can, if there's a clue in there that maybe we should not overlook. And that's what your father believed, right? That the medium might have that key that's always been missing for the storyline of this house. It was weird, but what I was really proud of in this episode, excited about, Robin, the historian, you know, as I told you at the beginning of this, Alex, what more is there to tell of the Whaley House? How much more story can we get in? She breaks out letters nobody else has seen, only a few members of the staff. And this is the first time in history we get a reveal that the Whaleys were haunted as well, that when they lived there, there were spirits haunting that house. And that blew my mind. Talking to her about what this was in that letter. I don't know if people remember, but that letter was crazy. It's written on, you know, the regular way a letter would be. And then she would write then down the sides as well. And then diagonal. So they had to get a translation of the letters because of the way they were written, but they were in a time when they were, you know, saving paper. And it's crazy, but you read this letter about what they're dealing with, this dark force, this spirit. And it was so bad that, you know, the husband and wife weren't always in the house. He was out traveling, doing business. She'd be out visiting family. He would get home early enough that he could quickly get to his room and lock his door at night before things would start to happen in his house. Now, granted, did this guy have it coming? I mean, he bought the property where there were gallows.
Right.
And he was witness to the hangings of Yankee Jim. And then later of, let me get the names here right, if I can find them, Juan Verdugo and the other gentleman. And then he was also part of the, I can't say assassination, but the other Antonio Garra, who was kind of the leader of that resistance at the time. And, you know, again, Antonio Garra and Juan Verdugo and the group, they believe they were heroes in their own mind because this is the land that the white man had taken away from them. And they had deemed they're getting back their property. They're getting back their stuff. And to go back in there, they're going to go for their people. So it's like one side sees them as complete villains. The other side sees these guys as national treasures and heroes trying to get this land that's been stolen away from them. And what happens to Antonio Garra? He has to go dig his own grave, stand in front of the hole. Three men, including Mr. Whaley, shoot him into the grave, and then they bury him.
Yeah.
So this is
another layer of the onion being peeled here. And don't forget, Mr. Whaley was an opportunistic personality. He saw something good, he would go for it regardless at all costs. And that, to me, is just kind of a karma full circle. I don't wish it on him, you know, but makes you wonder why they were haunted like that, you know, considering the obviousness of what went on that land prior to the structures going up.
We've got a couple questions popping up. I'm going to try to keep my eye out for them. Robert asks, why does mainstream science not study this more seriously? And I don't think that's true, Robert. As a matter of fact, the government has studied the paranormal and continues to, whether you want to believe it or not, they are continuing to keep an eye on it. There's articles that come out quite often talking about this. They have studied psychic phenomena. They've studied ghosts. They do take it seriously. But again, it's something that bothers science because it's not programmable. It's not something you can flip a switch and the ghost will be there. They're there when they want to be. They interact when they want to. So that's how it breaks down. But there is a lot of science that has looked into this. And now if you start looking, a lot of quantum scientists are talking about the spirit realm and about life after death. So they are taking it seriously. But, you know, whenever it's played on TV, you get the X-Files theme. And
you've got mainstream media too, and you have to understand quantum physics has been around a very long time. We've actually, the government's been working on things way before we can even comprehend it. It's not for public consumption, and that's a shame. But there's a lot of disclosure that's been coming out, and there's a reason for it. And, you know, you have to do your own research. You have to allow people to wake up and ask the questions. And that's a great question that's being asked right now because it's showing me personally, you want to know, you want to ask those questions, whether the information's been out there and accepted or not, you're doing your job, you know. And the more people do that and go online and ask the questions and see what other people are saying, what books are written on it, who's researched what, who's in the field, who's either known or not known. There's a lot of people that are out there that have done the work. I believe we're moving into that futuristic availability for all of this to come together and more accepted. I think mediumship gets stuck in that middle there, which is what my father would battle with because he had a PhD, and that's a no-no. And, you know, in England, mediumship is revered. But when you cross the two, when you cross the streams, they don't come out so good. But that's not sure we know that. The Holzer file shows you that.
That's right. You can visit Alexandra's site at alexandraholzer.com and get more information on Alexandra, her book, and you do readings as well, correct, Alex?
If somebody needs me, I will do it, yes.
Okay. Yes. So we'll make sure people know that. And make sure to check out Holzer File Season 1, streaming now on Discovery Plus. And big news, the Discovery Plus is just getting bigger and bigger by the day. And Holzer File Season 2 returns to the air on Discovery Plus on February 6th, I believe it is. Saturday, February 6th, we'll be back on the air, and we will be with our brand new episode. I think it's episode 7 of the Holzer Files, and then every week they'll release a new episode on Discovery Plus. I know, the sky is falling. There's a big change in the air. Some people are okay with it. Some people are not. The show, the cast, the production company has nothing to say with this. We, have, of course, support Discovery and Travel Channel in their new endeavors. And, you know, I personally foresee this as kind of the wave of the future. People have been whining for years about wanting a la carte TV, where they don't have to spend $150 a month for 2,000 channels they don't want. So I think now you're going to be able to start picking and choosing and putting together packages. And I do want people to realize Discovery Plus is not just Travel Channel. You get this huge corporate umbrella of all of their channels under one deal. So our show returns on the 6th. Go try out the 7-day free trial. Just go try it out. Look at how much flipping stuff is on there for you to check out for yourself. It's well worth it. I just want to make that mention. We can officially mention it now that we are back with the final 7 episodes of the year, 7 or 8 episodes of the season that will begin airing February 6th on Discovery Plus. I know for some it's not going to work. Thank you for your love and watching. And if we find out when they're going to rerun it on travel or make it accessible on other forums, I will let you know. So keep following along with us on these discussions and on our social media, because we do want to continue this relationship with the viewers. We appreciate your support and love of the show. I got lots of ums in this. Next week, I do want to mention as well, we're going to be back doing another episode of Holzer's Ghosts. And in that episode, we're going to talk about season 1, episode 4, The Devil in Texas, which was another case that was really horrifying when we go into the details of this case in Texas that leads us to another case. And this mother and her two children and how she's being affected and afflicted. And the first story, unfortunately, did not end well. Your father tried and gave the best advice he could, but this demonic force had a hold on this man in a really horrible way. So next week, we'll be back on Thursday night, same bat time, same bat channel, talking about that. And I'll have some special guests. I think Reverend Bill Bean from the episode is going to join me. I'm going to reach out and try to get Lydia to give us an update on her life. As far as I know, she's been doing great. She had kept in touch with me for a while, and watching her on social media, she's always very happy and cheerful, and things seem to be going much better in her life. So we're very happy to hear that. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. When we do, we've got some more ghost stories from the Whaley House. We'll discuss more about this episode, and we'll talk about Alex's visit to the Whaley House. When we continue, you're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for tuning in. Remember, you can hear us every Wednesday, Thursday, and now Fridays while we're reviewing the Holzer Files. I say that now. We'll be back next week. I think I'm taking a week off because I'm going to be working on a special project, but then I'll be back again doing these live on Thursday night. So I hope that you'll continue to join me and we'll have some fun. Again, all the episodes will now be found over on Discovery Plus. So you can find out more information and go try the 7-day free trial over there. I know you didn't tune into this for a commercial tonight, but you've been asking me. I'm just trying to alert you to the big changes and what's been going on. Now, during our investigation and interview, we talked to Dean Glass, who was amazing and loves this place unbelievably. He is passionate. He visited there when he was a child. He visited there as a teenager. He knew he wanted to be a part of it and ended up working at the Whaley House and loved it, with the management company taking care of it for years. Now that's, I just heard, might be changing over to a for-profit organization, and his management company may not be working with them anymore. We wish Dean and the crew of Soho all the luck in the world. Hope they can continue, because they've really refurbished, restored, and resurrected the Whaley House in an amazing way. But Alex, were you as surprised as we were to see Dean's reaction of how he's talking, and all of a sudden you just start to see him fold in on himself, and then he realizes, I know they're here listening to what I'm saying about them. I just want to be careful. I don't want to piss them off. That's the first I've ever heard that in an investigation. Was that a surprise to you too?
It was. It was because it shows you that when you're in the moment and you're talking about the environment that you're in that is purportedly haunted with several layers of happenings, it just goes to show you the proof that they're around you, even if you can't see them with your eyes, and they can control that environment quite heavily and affect your behavior and affect your responses. And then the other part is, you know, he's an anxious personality anyway. And so, you know, I think they react off of that and take that energy. So I, you know, doing that interview, I think he was doomed, you know, because they were already like, come on, say the words.
Well, and that all of the employees, as much as they love this place and feel a part of it, each one of them felt this kind of dark oppression in the house. They all felt something spooky and weird. I did ask Dean a little bit more about his stories, and I'm playing off the cuff here, so bear with me, folks. I've got an actual video of Dean talking to us about his encounters and ghostly story, so we're going to play that for you now.
I am in the historic Whaley House, the very haunted historic Whaley House, and this is Dean. And Dean, what is your position at the Whaley House?
I am the administrative manager.
The administrative manager. You seem like a no-nonsense kind of guy, Dean.
Yeah, pretty much true.
I know you love the history of this place, and although your shirt betrays that you might believe in ghosts, tell me personally, have you ever had a real experience with the paranormal here?
I have. I've had several, actually.
And what has been one of the most profound moments you've ever had?
I think it was the first one. It was right after I started volunteering here, about 2 months. And I showed up for work one morning. It was about half an hour before we opened. It was 9:30 in the morning or so. And the person in charge sent me upstairs to get dressed in period clothing, which we all wore at the time. And the dressing room was upstairs. And as I was walking up the stairs right here, I caught something out of the corner of my eye. And I turned, and it looked like pant legs between the railings here. And as I cocked my head up, I saw a man that actually looked like Thomas Whaley, although he was young. We have a photograph of Mr. Whaley when he was 20, and he looked like a young man, like he did in that photo. Really piercing eyes. But he was staring right at me, kind of like this, but his arms seemed to be really wide open, you know, like even further than I can reach, without him actually stooping down. It was just like his arms were very long. And he just stared at me for a few seconds and it was gone. That really kind of startled me, because I knew there was nobody up here. But instead of getting scared and running down, I came up and came around here and I looked to see if somebody was playing a trick on me or something, and nothing like that. And then I heard a few days later that my coworker Jokey had seen the same man on the same day, but she saw him when she was closing up the museum at night, and from a different vantage point. She was coming out of the theater upstairs, but she did see the man, but he was not looking at her. He was looking down at where I had been standing.
So are you a believer now, Dean?
Yes, that definitely made a believer out of me.
All right, if people are interested in coming to the Whaley House, do you offer ghost hunts, tours? What can they find?
We do not do ghost hunts at the present time, but we do have late night tours pretty frequently, and we're open 4 nights a week in the off season and 7 nights a week all through the summer.
Now, of course, that has changed due to COVID. I believe they've been closed here because of the COVID crisis, especially in California, with how bad it's been. So that was one of the experiences. So talking with him, we had a chance to talk with Brandon, who you saw in the episode. He's the young man who is a volunteer there and loved to be there. But he's the one that had been knocked to the ground. And I got to tell you, Alex, I've been to a lot of haunted locations. I've felt breezes go by me. I've seen and heard things move. I've never been touched. So when he starts telling me he gets knocked to the ground, my spidey sense goes off and I'm like, oh man, this kid's just delusional. This is crazy. But in the same instance, I'm running, but something just yanked your underwear down around your ass, you know, 2 hours ago. So I'm trying to process all this, and I could see it in Shane's eyes too, that he's just like, why stay in this place? It's so unnerving, but the love for it seems to just slightly out-edge the unnerved feeling every employee has about being in that location. How do you think that works? I mean, to have such a dichotomy of good and evil or dark and light energy, and people not, I mean, naturally we'd all think you'd bolt.
You know, I think for those, I wouldn't say of the faint heart, you know, there are, like, my sister's a great example. Alex, go find out what's going on. I hear noises in the hallway and I'm 8 years old. Like, what the frack? What is that? There's just people that can't get to that point. But then I find the majority of people want to find out more. So that fear-driven anxiety of why would you stay there? Why would you go back? Why would you make this a career? Why would you be a passionate soul about it is because you're drawn to it. Again, you're mixing these energies again. And so parts of it maybe are pulling you in, and other parts of it you feel maybe he was there from a past life. Maybe he was, there's a connection there. You have to look at reincarnation. You have to look at all of these things. I mean, there's it's really complex, I think. And so in his case, clearly he's destined to have been a part of that whole story.
You know, I mentioned the COVID restrictions. Ruth pops up and asks, has COVID precautions made a difference in how you film the new shows? Yeah, Ruth, we actually, for season two, stepped out. We started filming. I think we filmed our first 5 episodes. And then March, boom, ba bum, bump. And the COVID crisis hit, and we were starting to film our 6th episode. We were one day in, and all of a sudden on the news, we're talking about closing states, closing borders, closing travel. It was like just the news was going bonkers. So we just thought, let's all go home. We're all spread out. Let's go home. We'll see how long this takes. And then we were gone for 90 days. And Discovery and Travel put together a very tight protocol for working again. We had to sign off on it. We could point out anything we didn't like. And it was a different environment. But truthfully, I've never felt safer traveling. There'd be 30 of us on an entire plane. You know, airports were empty. Everything was empty. So I felt a lot safer and a lot cleaner than I do going to the grocery store to buy food for my family. So that was kind of the way it worked out. But yes, it did have an effect and may continue to have an effect as we see this rollout. People keep asking, when is season 3? We have to finish showing you season 2. Tune in. Watch it. Watch it over and over and over and over. Keep watching the Holzer Files. If you want more, you got to let them know that that you will actually tune in for it. Marty asks, did the recent renovations result in more encounters in the house at the Whaley House? Yeah, they're constantly tweaking, fixing, and that's a great question. Alex, do you understand that more? Why is it upsetting to spirits when we're affecting the structure itself?
I'll give you an example. My father passed away in his apartment the way he wanted it and predicted, and he went out that way. And no sooner than days later, my sister called up and said, my husband is freaking out. Uncle Bill says that the cabinets keep slamming open and shut because we move things around, because we put our stuff away. If you interrupt what was there before and you want to redo it, they get very offended because it's what they've known. They don't understand the change. They're in a time and space that we can't correlate to because we move on while we're still of the physical. So when you're no longer of the physical, you're kind of in this memory hold, if you will. And so they like things the way that they had it. So I think sometimes they get offended and they feel like, you know what? Why did you just repaint this whole room? what are you doing? And that's where you get these activities of things moving around or slamming or breaking, because that's their way of telling you, I don't approve. You know, I just like the Shanley Hotel in Napanock, New York, that went on for a long time. They were still renovating forever. So a lot of happenings can be stirred up when you start to do construction.
Well, you're also, if I understand, you're messing with energy patterns, things that have been set. It's kind of like taking an old audio tape or a video cassette, and it's all this particle, all the magnetic resonance is on that tape. And then you just start taking a small magnet and waving it along. You're disrupting the pattern of that energy, and it's never the same, which might upset the spirit realm as well, is part of the theory, as I understand. Lena writes, I've gone to the Whaley House looking for ghosts and didn't really see any. But my husband, who did not want to see ghosts, was the one who had the activity. Yeah, that's always the way it seems to be, right? You go into these locations. I love doing the live events we've done over the years, Alex, because, you know, the woman will bring her husband begrudgingly, or the husband brings a wife begrudgingly because it's their thing. And then the one that's not into the paranormal has the experience, and the other one's really pissed at them because this was my trip. Why do you get to have the experience? But that is the way it turns out. So Brandon's knocked to the fort. Robin Lakin talked to us about the history, showed us the pictures, showed us the letters. And that was another emotional Dave moment that did not make it, thankfully. Because as he's talking about what – she's talking to me about what this family went through and the deaths, and then Violet Whaley taking her own life, I just started having tears pouring down my face. And, again, I love it because the camera guys, they don't know – you know, you're a big, burly guy sitting there talking to this woman, and all of a sudden I just start, you know, as I'm listening to her talk. So, thankfully, they kept cutting away so you don't see me getting all misty-eyed and choked up on it. But with that said, if you don't mind, I would like to revisit a moment when we were in HQ prior to heading out there. This was, as I said, our first episode we filmed together. You have had all of these videos and film and everything, but it's all been in formats you can't really use anymore. They digitized, they saved a lot of these things for you. You could see the emotion in your face and your eyes start to well up when we're watching that footage. What was that like for you to see your dad at like the peak of his fame, his popularity and power, and hearing that voice come back to you again?
It was very uncomfortable because I couldn't do it in private. And that was something that I sacrificed for the greater good of why we're doing this. I knew that some of it would be shown, that we would be listening to this, and I had to put myself in a place where that's my father and he's so young. And when I grew up, you know, I always remember daddy as this older man with this funny accent that was just so bizarre, so freaking bizarre. So he was so well put together and his hair wasn't sticking up and he actually matched and was so serious. And it just made me laugh inside after, but you know, I just wanted to just leave the room, honestly, because I felt like I'm not over it yet, you know, and that's part of what we're all learning when we lose animals and people. It just sometimes it takes some of us longer than others. So it just puts it back in my space.
I can agree. 10 years, you know, you think, oh, we move on in life, but we don't. I know my mom, who you knew, you know, we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary. It never really goes away. You just move on. I saw that and I wanted to address that because I know I had a lot of people that asked, why were you getting misty? And I have to remind, that was her dad. And she was seeing her dad at his kind of peak.
that's the kind of thing that I have to deal with the show, because, you know, you guys are doing your thing and we're getting the story out. And there's another story out of where my father had started or picked up, or, you know, and the whole time it's like, but it's personal and it can't be personal, but how can it not be? So it's like I said, it's a process of trying to, but you know, inside I'm just like, I went back to the hotel room with my bottles of wine that they gave so graciously. And I'm like,
I know, I could hear you.
What, you know what?
Christy asks, Alex, do you think that the spirits get confused when you move things around or build or take down walls?
Oh, well, actually, I don't. And the only reason why I say it, there's this old photo of the, there's this in Europe, and it's in my father's psychic photography book. It's got all the pictures, the black and whites. He went to a monastery in Europe, and it's a cathedral, actually. And there was a fire in the cathedral, and there's two photos. One is where the monks, it looks like the monks, because it's hooded shaped figures. They're all in flames, and there's five or six in a row on the front lawn, so running out of a fire. And then inside, another photography shot was of these circular round shapes, which seem to be heads attached to a body, all in the pews in the row, and they seem very low to the ground. They had rebuilt the cathedral and raised the floors. So what he had found out, my father had found out, that these were the original monks standing on the original flooring, which made them look like very short. In reality, they were standing on the correct floor through the damage of the fire after they rebuilt it, showing themselves as still being part of that cathedral and hadn't moved on yet. So I'm going to say no, that they can only go back to a time and place of when they left, and that's what they know. So I do believe that it doesn't interfere with that. I feel like from that photography and the history of that cathedral and the monks, they stood right where they stood with the original flooring, yet the flooring had been raised after the fire. It's interesting.
Very cool. A couple more stories we'll do here that didn't make it on air, Alex. I don't even know if I've had a chance to tell you about this. So when we did the full investigation, Cindy kept being pulled to that bedroom downstairs. I went up to the theater, and that's where I got the character that appeared on the SLS camera, and I got the EVP responding to me. She's downstairs in another room with Shane working, and this didn't make the cut because, again, it's fascinating. It's cool, but it didn't tie into Juan Verdugo. So it was like, what do we keep? What do we cut? And it gets really hard when you've got to pare it down to 42, 43 minutes. But Cindy's doing her automatic writing and talking to the spirits, all of a sudden she goes, Dave's being too loud. The spirit is unhappy. He's going to wake the baby. He's going to wake the baby. And I'm just talking at a regular volume like this, and I'm doing my EVP recording. I play back the EVP recorder, and I get this voice, this creepy woman's voice that goes, you're going to wake the baby. Comes, and it was that clear on the EVP. And I'm like, what the, what? And I looked out the windows. Did somebody walk by? What? That's crazy. And then Cindy calls me downstairs. I told her about it. I'm like, you guys got to hear this. I played it. And she turns to Shane. She's like, I told you he was peeing too damn loud. But that was a really weird moment. Again, some of these snippets, these cool bits, folks, they don't make it because, again, although that's fascinating, that's not the dark force we were there trying to investigate. And it's not like we change the story. We go with the story. But some of the little elements of the other little aspects don't resonate. And off the theater is the children's room where they've got the baby crib and everything set up. So it's pretty, pretty powerful that we had that moment. Also during the investigation, they have the tent and thing out in the back. The light bulb, boom, exploded. And I believe exploded in the presence of one of the Discovery Channel execs. And that kind of threw her for a loop. They had to fix that up and get things going. We did that was a tough episode for me because, you know, obviously I'd felt violated getting my underwear pulled down. And then when we were doing that EVP session underneath the archway where the actual gallows once stood, we hear, you know, as I start prodding Juan Verdugo, and the reason we went that way was because Cindy was picking up a name. She's like, I'm getting like a John Vargas. I'm like, Juan Verdugo. You know, if you're trying to translate, what are you getting? She pulls that out. We mention it. And as soon as I go, Juan, you know, are you the one that was responsible? We hear this bang, and it sounds like a shotgun go off in the house. And I think because of the way I was approaching things and I was trying to be authoritative and I was, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you don't have authority over us, that it showed me it what it could really do. And people ask me all the time what it felt like to get hit. And I've said that I thought at first it was because it's so dark in there. I thought one of the cameramen had come around and maybe tripped and fallen into me because it was that much force. But if he fell into me, I would probably fall down. In this, I get lifted up. It was like somebody tackled me from the side, like a lineman just put his shoulder into my chest and lifted me up into Shane. And I hit him with such force and hit the ground. I was like, what the hell? And had to clear my mind. I walked outside after that. I don't like walking away from those moments, but it was just like, no, I'm out. When I turned around and there was nobody there, that powerful hit was totally off-putting to me, very uncomfortable. And then, you know, we get the EVP of it laughing afterwards. You know, was that you, Juan? And that kind of meaty ha, 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 ha coming through the EVP recorder. What do you say to people? And I know you've been to a lot of locations. You've experienced quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Where the hell does that force come from that it could knock a 290-pound guy up into somebody else and hit the ground like a sack of potatoes?
You're a mere 240. Come on. It's, you know, it happens. And then before you realize what's happening, it's over. And now you have to process what just happened. It's unnerving because you can't see what just did that to you. You know, we've got this fixation of the physical self. And once the physical's gone, it's either all over or we go somewhere else, because the soul is the personality. It's who we are, not the shell that we're born into. That's going to dissipate at some point. So when you project out what we become, where we go, if we're stuck like a ghost or free as a spirit, if we're stuck and we're this really horrible personality that was once in life of the physical, that we come back with that same energy and anger and force that we can still push you like that without hands. So we have to separate the perception of you have to have hands to do that. You know, that's actually, it's I think 10 times worse once you're in that middle layer, because the energy around and what's around him helping him, you're going to have somebody negative. They're going to call in their buddies too. You don't even know what's around. You're only picking up in that moment, but there could be other things that are egging him on to do it too. So it's like, you know,
you consider you've got the death of Violet Whaley right there on that spot, right? Right after she'd shot herself in the chest and her father carried her in and laid her down, it was 3 feet away from that spot. It's right at the spot Brandon was knocked to the ground. I get chucked. Louise asks, Dave, did that cause any bruising on you afterwards? No, thankfully, because I was thrown into Shane. Poor Shane was bruised. You know, he was off balance, but he took it like a football player too. Had he folded and gone, I think we both would have been in a lot of trouble, but he stood up as I hit him hard, and that's why you see me hit the ground. It was rock meeting immovable force, and I just collapsed, and that was it. Poor Shane had to lift me out. It shook me so bad. That's why I had trouble even getting up. I was so like, what the flip? What? And getting back up. But I didn't have any bruising. I did actually go outside and pull off my shirt, and I'm looking around and I asked, do you see anything? Is there anything there? Is there a red mark? Is there something, hands, a shoulder mark? No, Dave, there's nothing there. And they're like, are you sure you didn't pass out? I'm like, no, I was awake through the whole thing. And they're asking me, this is production and directors. And they're like, you can't fuck around, Dave. We're not going to film fake shit. Did you do this? And I'm like, I didn't do it. Something pushed me and lifted me off the ground. So they went and they actually reviewed the footage, and our executive saw the footage, saw what had happened to me, and she said, I want to go now. Can somebody walk me to the car? And they got her out of there. That's how unnerving it was. When they looked at it, they came back in and they're like, Dave, this is, it's unbelievable. You see your knees buckle and you lift up off the ground towards Shane. I don't know how you're doing it. It looks like something's lifting you up. That is insane. And there was a lot of talk on that because, again, we want to do a show that's going to honor your dad, honor the paranormal, honor history. None of us are there to screw around. None of us are there to fake anything and mock what we're doing. But you have an experience like that, everybody's got to question it. And there are people on that show that work behind the scenes who have worked on other shows that were just like, oh, no, man, I've worked on other shows. There's no way that just happened. There's no way. Now, Rob Saffy, who is our executive VP, or I don't know what the title, he's our director.
Many things.
Yeah, showrunner, cameraman.
All of it.
He stays on me. I love that camera. I'm like, dude, he didn't even try to help me. He goes, I'm just there to document, man. You're like a tiger in the wild. I'm not there to feed you, and I'm not there to save the gazelle you're about to eat. I just have to film what's happening to you. So they did that. With that said, That episode, I was not bruised. Stay tuned. Season two, there is an episode where I do not walk away unscathed. I have something that happens to me. It literally scared the shit out of me, what occurred. And I come out of it with a mark. I still have a scar. So did I ever show you the pictures of that, Alex, or no?
I don't think so.
That'll be coming up later on. Season two, make sure you watch it. That's another reason to tune in. Trying to keep up with questions and talk about the rest of this. I know a lot of people are, you know, concerned. What does it feel like? But it didn't, I can't say it felt like hands or anything. It was just a force, like that bump and shuffle kind of boom hit. And I, like I said, I kind of thought it was somebody that tripped into me. I couldn't figure out what was going on. We called the episode kind of short. The Shane and Cindy kept investigating in there. I did go back in. I was so shaken, and I was shaking outside for a little bit. Before we left, I go, I got to go back in. And they're like, why? And I said, because I can't let this thing beat me. I got to go back in the house. So I walked back in, and I said, I respect that you have the energy to do that. And I apologize for calling you out. And I was very careful with that because I felt bad because I don't like to challenge ghosts. I don't like to be a schmuck to ghosts, even if this guy was a bad guy or whatever. In my head, I knew he was the hero of his story. And I wanted to apologize. And I was very adamant that we would get help. And we took Robin aside and Brandon aside. And I told them, I said, listen, this investigation doesn't end here. What we've seen and what we've experienced is creepy. Be respectful. Keep doing what you're doing. I've apologized to the spirit. I don't think you guys are going to, as long as nobody's challenging him or doing something like that, I don't think you're going to have that problem. We think Brandon's very sensitive. He was probably picking up on Violet Whaley's death because of the feeling he felt in his chest and then kind of passed out, fell to the ground. That was a different force than what hit me. And we did make that. And I told our executives and directors, I'm like, I've got to let them know we're here to help. And they're like, what do you want to do? I said, I just, please get me to them. And I said, listen, I know you guys have school kids that come through here. People are going to watch this and they're going to be freaked out. But understand, if anything weird happens again, we will come back and we will bring help. We'll bring we had shamans and a couple other people on standby if the need be. And they said, that's fine. Thank you. We don't want to shun or push the Whaley family out, which I respect. So I just said, just be aware they're not the only spirits in this house. And that's kind of the way we left it. With them, but there was physical contact. We had the auditory sound of a gun going off after I challenged him. Did you cause Violet Whaley to take her life? We hear the gun go. We got the EVP. We got the EVP of the laughter. Cindy was definitely picking up on a lot of energy there. So it was an active place and definitely lives up to the hype that your father put on it, that this was the most haunted house in America. And then you and I got to go back for TV Guide, which was cool. That was my, how sad is that? My big excitement was I got to be in TV Guide, but we got to go back. You got to step through that threshold. You're a sensitive, and I don't know if everybody's aware of that as well. You're a paranormal investigator and you're a sensitive. Walking in there, first of all, knowing how important this place was to your father, did you feel your father's presence there with you when we were in that house?
Always. Always. And that's why I felt safe. I have to be honest with you now. If we were to hunker down and things would quiet down and I was, the intention was to run through and speak to whomever's there, I'm pretty sure things would start happening. But I just feel like he made me feel safe. And I had that going in and it just felt like we were in a bubble. I just knew nothing was going to happen while we were in that space. And I really feel he's a strong force like that. I know it sounds gitchy, but, you know, he stood for something in life. And in the afterlife, it continues. He has work to do still. It's not going to end, you know, right now. And so we went in there. It was just like, and it was so funny because Dean was like, your father was in this room too. And this was part of the original carpeting. Because remember, they redid the carpeting. He goes, I can cut you a piece and send it to you if you'd like. And I'm like, okay, that'd be great, you know, because, and then I had to go look and I kind of walked in that room downstairs, you know, and it was just, it's so bizarre because you have it in your mind of what it's like. And he was there before so many decades ago. And then I'm walking in there with you guys and it seemed like it was a smaller space. It just felt smaller. But it was so heavy in there. It was like thick. It was just like so much was going on in there. Some of it nice and very family oriented, and other parts were not nice, and still a score to settle was the first thing that I picked up on there too. So yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, I have another question, and we've got one more video. Robin told me some ghost stories as well, but Jonathan Patrick says, can objects really be haunted? So why don't you take that? What's your thoughts? Can objects be haunted? Can spirits attach to an object?
Absolutely. They make their impressions on the physical items as well. It's not just if they lived in the house and they don't want to leave. If their belongings go somewhere else and you pick it up like my father did at a flea market in New York, you know, on a Sunday, that was brought home. I lived that literally year after year. He would constantly bring home different artifacts like masks and these like lanterns, and then he would make them into lamps. So he desecrates these things with glue stick and all this stuff, and things would start happening. And I paid attention because I would like to see what his finds were every Sunday. And I'd get it like a cross necklace sometimes. And I'm like, I never questioned where he got it from. And then it started to dawn on me every time he did that, every Sunday after, something in the house would change. The energy, it would just feel weird, like I was being watched. It wasn't like the apartment was haunted. He would bring in objects that were owned by other people and God knows from different parts of the world. And they just sell them at these flea markets back in the day. This is what you did. You don't care about the history. If you make $10, that's what you're supposed to do. So, oh God, yeah, you can attach to anything. The intention's there. They don't want to let go. They're not going to let go.
Now, do you think, you understand spirit and energy, do you think that these items are truly haunted by an intelligent spirit, or is this like my ring? This means something to me. This is my wedding ring. My wife picked this out for me, gave it to me. When I die, will I be haunting this, or is it like an energetic imprint left with this of the essence of who I am, as opposed to the spirit of who I am?
Oh. It depends on the intention of the spirit when they're coming back. Why would they want to possess that item unless they had to get a message to the other person? So in this case with Winnie, if she needs to hear from you because she's having a hard time grieving the loss, you might use that ring as a way to connect to her and communicate, I'm still here. And then the other side of it is if you didn't go very well and you're angry and you don't understand why you're still not here of the physical world, you take it out on that object, and whoever has that object is going to feel that negativity because they don't understand. So it can go both ways.
All right. We've got time. We're going to do this video again, talking to Robin from the Whaley House. She was kind enough to share an experience with us as well. So we're going to do that. I want everybody to get a chance to hear everything we've got going here. So let me pull that up. We're in the historic Whaley House of San Diego. Standing in front of me, I have Robin, who is involved with the staff and historian for this building. Robin, you've had a lot of experiences, and you were telling me off camera that you had an experience with a full-on apparition in the Whaley House.
Yes, I did.
Would you tell me about that, please?
It was in 2005. It's the only one that I know for a fact that I've seen. It caught me off guard. It was about 9 in the morning. And I had come into the museum and gone into what is the general store area. And we have a closet there where we kept extra supplies. And I went into the closet to retrieve something from there. And as I shut the door, a man walked right past me into the doorway into the dining room, which is about 4 foot distance. I saw him in my peripheral. I didn't think anything of it. In fact, the only thing I thought as I closed the door was, oh, that's funny, I didn't even hear him come in. And then I went and put down what I was retrieving, and as about a minute or two ticked by before I started realizing something was wrong with what I'd seen, because our brains are processing data all the time, and there was something not adding up right. And then I thought, why didn't I hear him? Because I expected that it was my coworker, who we all wore period clothing at that time. And I thought, well, I should have heard a lot of things. Why didn't I didn't hear the bell on the door? At the time, we had a bell on the door that would ring if we knew if staff came in. And if we were upstairs or something, we could hear that door open. And I didn't hear a key in the lock, I didn't hear the bell, I didn't hear the door close. And the man had hobnail boots, period reproduction boots, and clunk, 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 clunk. And I should have heard a lot of things as he had, would have announced his presence before I ever would have seen him go by. And I just thought, huh, okay, that's really weird. And I thought, no, there's no way that I just saw what I think I just saw. And it went all over and he wasn't here. And I went outside and he was at the museum shop getting ready to come over. And I thought,
who was at the museum shop?
My coworker, who I presumed it was the man that went past me. And he had never come, he hadn't gotten over yet. And I just said, oh my gosh, I saw one of them and I presume it's Mr. Whaley. He wasn't particularly tall. I would say about 5'6", 5'5", it's hard to tell. He also moved very, very smooth. We have a gait when we walk, we have an up and a down, and he didn't. He just, it was like he rolled by on a rollerblade or on roller skates or something. It was just very smooth, a little too smooth, and so quiet that I saw him, because I know I did, because I thought, I didn't hear him come in. And that's the only one I know I've seen. And then I wondered, how many have I seen without realizing it? We had a period of about 15 years where we all had to wear period clothing. And when we're busy talking, there's a lot going on in our periphery. And I don't think anything when I see a hoop or a silhouette of a woman in the other side of the room or the other side of the hall. I don't think about it. I'm expecting that there are people with me that are dressed in like garments. And I may have seen them many more times than that. But that's the one time that I know, because it was more of a controlled environment. And I was the only one here. And I had also been the first one in. I had to disarm the house. And that was another clue that nobody had been in the house before me. So we all, you know, a lot of times I wonder, is somebody playing a joke on me? Because sometimes I do that. No, I don't. And there's always that possibility that somebody's pranking you. And there wasn't. There's no possibility. So it's the one time I know I did. And I thought, that's okay, as long as they're kind of moving away. I do not want to walk in a room and see someone standing there looking at me, because I don't know what will happen to me. I might wind up being here a lot longer than I was planning. And I don't want to, you know, have heart failure or something.
You don't want to become one of the ghosts of the Whaley House?
I want to meet them, but when I'm ready. So, we have a cardboard cutout of Mr. Whaley, and we bring him in every night. And sometimes you'll walk by that and just, oh my gosh. And you know he's there, and it still gets you. So if I saw something beyond that, I don't know how I would receive it. Our paper doll is enough.
The Whaley House. If people want to come visit, how do they get in and where do they find more information?
We're located in Old Town San Diego, and you come right to our museum shop, which is just adjacent to our museum. It's a gold cottage with a fancy red and white striped roof, and we sell admission there. We're open daytimes from 10 to 4:30 p.m., and we are open evenings from 5 p.m. till 9:30 p.m. on Saturdays. Different times for different days. Summer, we're open 7 days a week, 7 nights a week. It's not too hard to get in here.
Great. Thank you, Robin. All right. We're wrapping up. Great episode. A lot of fun. Interesting stuff. Again, I can see why your dad deemed this one of the most haunted houses in the United States. It definitely lived up to it. And I hope that it will be around for a long time and allow people in there to continue to see and witness the truth of the Whaley House for a long time. What's going on in your world, Alex? How can people reach out to you? Go ahead and give yourself a little plug here.
Okay, plugging away. The new book won't be out until spring, so I'll promote that when that comes out. We do have another project in the pipeline and other things that will be coming up, maybe towards summertime. So it's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but it's all for the greater good, which will be great also for the Holzer Files as well. And people can always find me on social media. Yes, I do all three. Instagram, I don't even know why I'm on there, but I'm on there. I got the Facebook and I got that Twitter thing. And then there's the website. But you know me. If somebody needs anything, I do what I can. And we go from there.
Yep, alexandraholzer.com. Check out the website. You can check out Holzer Files Season 1, streaming now on Discovery Plus. We will be back next week, so make sure you watch Season 1, Episode 4, The Devil in Texas, and join me here again next Thursday as we talk about that case and go deeper into the history of the story and the strange haunting and exchange of energy that took place during that case. Thank you all for tuning in and spending another day with us here on the Best in the Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Darkness Radio.